So, you know, one thing I got from this morning's briefing is that there's a glimmer of hope. There's amendments being done to the EVDS system to implement, you know, different languages. You've addressed the vaccine shortages. You've also taken the vaccine to the people instead of, trying to meet the people halfway. Would you say that we are at a turning point in terms of our vaccine rollout?
Yeah, I think so. I think we are at not yet really fully where I want or what we have agreed with the team, but we've made huge progress. I think once I start seeing, like, for example, police, correctional service, soldiers, starting, not even a date, starting to vaccinate, I would know that it's a turning point. Once we start seeing people who are active in the economic side of it, starting to vaccinate because we need the economy to run. Obviously, I still carry my head from the economic side. So that would say at least we are turning point. And also, one of the things that would be my target going forward now, because what we've done, okay, let me just take a step back. What we've done, I've almost like staggered the things that we need to focus on. First approach is to sort out the glitches, understand what from the initial starting of the vaccine rollout, what are the lessons learned, and then we had like a full, almost full day with the team where we went through everything. This system. So I'm not even yet 100% where I want it. For example, with EVDS, I have asked to meet the team technical. Fortunately, with IT, at least, I have quite a lot that I know around that. So I've asked to meet them so that we can know, because there are things that don't make sense for me. They should be automated. For example, if you put in, you know, I go on the system, I put my name and all that, it should be. When a new site is put closer to where I am, if they were, let's say I'm here in Pretoria and they'd allocated me Johannesburg. When there's a new site, and maybe they would have allocated me Johannesburg because there is no site in Johannesburg where I am. But if a site comes, it doesn't have to have a person specifically going into the system to make sure that I'm redirected. It needs to be automated. So we're sorting that out. We're trying to see if within the scope, the pricing and everything that has been done without having to go out on tender again, we can be able to change that. So I'm looking forward to that engagement in the coming week to do that. So that's the other thing. Yes, the issue of coordinated, but we'll have to pay attention to it.
Is that the coordinated walk-ins?
Yeah, okay. Coordinated walk-ins, because we don't want people to walk in groups, because otherwise you'd see long queues like we see with other services of government. So, and they become super spreaders. So our issue is that we don't want too many gatherings. People must be coordinated. So if you go, for example, we are saying the MEC, let the MEC work together with the municipalities, with the councillors. Almost like a registration point where the councillor can say, okay, in my ward, there are so many people, you know, that are 60 and above, have not been vaccinated, you know, and then it helps the councillors as well to know their citizens, and they would know anyway. And then the MEC can say, okay, or the mayor and all those colleagues in the provinces, in the regions, in the municipalities, to say, okay, on this date, we're going to take this group, we're taking them to the vaccine. Because what we are learning as well, I mean, I made a reference of that study.
The UJ study.
And together, it's two studies. UJ in partnership with HSRC, and then the UJ independently, the SACHICHEM. Now, when you look at that, one of the issues that they are raising, when you try and drill down in terms of vaccine hesitation, you learn that it's around costs. Oh, I mean, for a person, the study did in Protea South. I am familiar with Soweto because that's where my home is. But when you look at the study there, I mean, from Protea, the person was going to Lens. It's 44 rands.
Oh, transport. It's an issue of transport.
It's 44 rands. So if, and they went to the informal settlement. So if you look at that informal settlement, you find 44, the person will have to wait for their grants. So they will register, get a message, they will not go. And then on the day of the grants, that's when they have the money. So that's why on your dates and everything, you'll have no shows and all that. So that's how one is interpreting the results. But secondly, the other issue that study raises is influential people. That's why it would be good to involve your counselors, your priests, because if they are in churches, then they can coordinate the social clubs. I mean, Minister Chavin was sharing how her mother got vaccinated. It was through their social club. So they coordinated through social club. They contacted MEC Poppy, and then she arranged for them to go and get vaccinated because it's far. They registered the same day and vaccinated the same day. Because it's coordinated, you make sure that vaccine is available. So they arrived, they registered, then they got vaccination because they would not be able to come twice.
So I'd like, since you are talking about the study and that's part of the questions, mm-hmm. I'd like to know, apart from, you know, English being a problem, transport, what other issues? And then also, can you elaborate on the response or the recommendations that were given? Uguti, how do we attend to that?
Look, the other issue that they picked up was around influenza. So she makes a reference of three sangomas, traditional healers in the community, who actually were discouraging people to go to vaccinate. And these traditional healers are seeing like 20 people a day in estimation. Now, if they see 20 people who are senior citizens and they tell them negative stories about the vaccine, then you are having people then doubt in the vaccine. So the issue, that's why we bring in the issue of influential people in the communities. Similarly, if you look at what MEC Poppy did, one of the reasons I believe where I'm sitting that Limpopo is doing well, she went and took the most influential people in Limpopo, which is the bishops. They vaccinated, everybody saw that the bishop has been vaccinated, they are all vaccinated. So it's those things that we are picking up. That's why I'm saying I'm relating the research, trying to make sense out of it after reading it. And then the other issue that they raise, obviously, is that the issues afterwards to say, when people go there, you're saying when they are sick, they shouldn't take anything except a Panado, but you're not giving them a Panado. So it's something that we're looking at the background to say, okay, when they go, especially those who come in from poor backgrounds, mm-hmm. would not be able to buy the Panado. I mean, I checked with my mother as well. Mm-hmm. She stays in Soweto. I registered her online. And then she selected online, and it was before it became on health. She registered, and then she went, when we selected, it asked us for a site. We selected Chaweno Clinic, and then they said during the week or weekend, she preferred weekend. But when that happened, there was no one vaccinating over the weekend. So I asked them in the team to say, why did the system agree when I registered my mother? To say she can vaccinate on Saturday.
That's actually one of the questions. What's happening with the weekend? Yakumla, when we met in Soweto, that was the first site that was piloted for the weekend. Mm. Has that been rolled out nationally?
Not yet.
Okay, what's the plan?
The problem there is that we are getting feedback from provinces, obviously, because human resources is managed by the provinces. So many of the provinces are raising the issue of the staff wanting overtime payment. So with the budget, unfortunately, we do not have a budget for.
So then does that mean then we can't, with the budget constraints?
We're hoping that some of the colleagues would volunteer that time.
But they overstretch, they'll say.
Look.
Or they want compensation to do the extra work.
No, we're looking at various areas. I mean, there's conversations with a Solidarity Fund to assist, for example, in Gauteng currently they're looking at additional nurses to help us with the search, but we support 4-8, we're hoping that they can come quickly into closing the gap. So there's that issue.
Mm. How much is the shortage? Or how many are needed?
I wouldn't have the actual figure right now. Okay. But I do know that there is a shortage. We've asked the provinces to give us in terms of the vaccine side. Remember, there are two things. With the Gauteng, we're dealing with the search in terms of the pressure and all that. So what we are doing with Solidarity Fund, we are taking those nurses to assist us with the capacity. Because part of what people are missing in the bed capacity is that you might have a bed. When we say bed capacity, it doesn't mean the physical bed. It's the bed and the people who help to work
the
on
nurse,
that.
The machines.
Yes.
The...
So you find you can have a bed with the machine and everything if there is no nurse or the manpower to manage, like doctor per bed, remember, ratio, nurse per bed ratio. If then it's more, those beds can be activated. So that's why we are bringing in capacity to say, so that the beds that are not activated can be activated. Not that they don't exist, they exist.
But they need them.
They need to be activated, so they need the human resources to help to activate those beds.
But then last week, Minister, in that briefing on Friday, you were in conversation with the Minister, Minister Senzo Mkhunu, about asking him for capacity as well.
Mm-hmm.
But today I didn't hear him. I thought maybe today's announcement was going to be how he's made available maybe additional people from public service to assist.
No, that is a different one.
Okay.
That one was specifically to deal with the administration of the department.
Oh, okay.
So there's administration of the department where, you know, because of what has happened over time with the challenges where CFOs, you'd have people leaving.
Oh.
Now at least there's a CFO, but there's an acting one, there's an acting HOD. So you do have challenges of capacity in terms of the administration. Because even all these plans, when we put these plans, there must be people to implement these plans. There must be people to run from the department so that you can see these plans going into the hospitals.
I see.
So if we say, for example, we're going to bring so many people into the province, I can't take them too. So I sent a letter, for example, we talked to NGOs, Right to Care and
Gift of the Givers.
And then I had a conversation with them to say, guys, Gauteng is in trouble. Are you willing to come on board to help? But they said, no problem. Then I linked them up with the province because I can't go into, the law does not allow me to go and run Gauteng. So I simply say, okay, these are the people, go and finish the conversation. So the conversation sometimes happens and then it ends there. And then you'll get the people coming back. Minister, since we spoke, you know, nothing has happened. Similarly with the doctors, the military. It took a couple of days to just get that activated. So that's why we had to start focusing on the human resource capacity. So I've signed a concurrence with the Premier. We're taking Dr. Zungu, who is in the Eastern Cape, because Eastern Cape has now appointed an HOD. She will come and act to the site.
Dr. Zungu, Sibongile?
Sibongile.
Oh, from KZN.
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
She's coming to act in Gauteng.
As what?
Requested, as HOD.
Oh, I see.
Yeah,
okay.
Until they can do the recruitment and everything to stabilize the system.
Okay.
But I think there's quite a lot of things that needs to happen there, but the Premier is handling those. So we're comfortable from that, and at least now. So that's why I'm saying human resources is just quite big.
Mm.
One of the things that we are looking at, I mean, I've asked the team to ask, to really explain to me what is the story of students.
Students, what about
doctor students.
Okay.
I don't know if you've seen them on Twitter, you know, who are waiting to complete their term.
Okay.
They must do community, but they are not placed because apparently there's no money. So I was asking about that to say, I've asked the team to give me a report. And I was talking to Minister Mboweni, and I said it's an indictment on him and me as people who believe in education and who've seen what education has done on our lives.
Some of them who had to go to Cuba to study,
yeah,
and come back.
You know, my son's friend actually was in Cuba, but at least he's placed. He's been placed for 2 years. No, is it sometime last year already?
So are you waiting for a report to tell you what's happening with that particular
situation?
Yeah,
because I need to understand because it doesn't make sense where I'm sitting.
Oh.
Informally, they are saying, no, there's no money, but... Yeah, so I'm trying to understand
what
is the problem, because surely we should know every year that we have these students
available waiting to be placed. Let's place them. Problems must communicate where there's a shortage. I see. Okay, can we zoom in on Gauteng, because we've already started that conversation? Obviously we are in a crisis. What is driving these numbers, and also why is it, Abantu, you feel from where you are sitting, why is it that people are not responding?
Yeah, no, I do feel that people are not
you
responding.
Sound very frustrated.
Yeah, I do feel that. One, even studying all the matches that are happening are just irritating, I must say. I mean, I think I just don't understand what type of a leader puts people that supports you at risk like this. Because if we are to tell the truth, some of these people where they stay, there's no option of isolating if they're sick. They're going to infect the entire families. You're not putting one person that is coming to your match at risk. You put in the entire family. You put in the entire community. Because they likely to, because if you look at our informal settlements, unfortunately, it's one of those things. Yes, we've not been able to build, but it's the situation we have. We're dealing with the pandemic with our socio-economic issues. When somebody comes out of an informal settlement, like I'm mentioning Protea South, for example, goes to a match, they stay in a shack. I grew up in a shack. I know the condition of a shack. There isn't a space to isolate because people share a room. People share the sitting room. There's literally, if somebody gets sick there, they can't go and stay in another place. The children there can't go and say you can keep them in the house. There's no space. They play outside. Now, you're not compromising one person, you're not compromising a family, you're compromising a community. And I just don't understand. Are we not having other mechanisms of raising our views, other mechanisms of raising our frustration and saying, this is not right, than compromising our own people, than compromise, taking advantage of the people that believe us, who believe in us for a better, but we're not, so that's my frustration. I just don't understand. I really don't.
Okay, other than the marches, are you feeling that people are still partying, people are going to restaurants, people are, look, are just, there's a general, people are relaxed?
Yesterday we did a bit of a walk up around in Marabastad. I did only Marabastad because I had to come back and focus on Gauteng. And I think people were wearing masks, but not wearing masks correctly. So I don't know whether they were wearing the mask because they see us. Then you find the mask is below the nose. So that's as well. And you think that, you know, the second wave, maybe I come from there. The second wave was very brutal to us in South Africa with the variant. A lot of people have died. A lot of people got sick. And there was a time where, for example, even with me, literally, I would not even want to open my WhatsApp because I just received notices of death. That's what happened in the second wave. And you think that that would have been a wake-up call for most of us, or almost all of us, where we saw even not only just ordinary people, prominent people dying. We lost a lot of people. We lost leaders. We lost comrades. We lost friends. We lost families. And when a message says we are now in the third wave, you expect people, even if they had started to lower their guard, to really say, hey, you know, this is the time that I need to be careful. Let me reduce my movement. Let me do this. Let me be cautious. Let me be this. But you just, I don't know whether it's a sense of, say, people abasakhathali, or people think that when they wear a mask, when they social distance, they're doing government a favor. Or, you know, sometimes you get that sense that people are almost thinking that protecting themselves is protecting government, and it's not. Because if you look at the impact of COVID-19, I mean, you go and sit and talk to social workers, where sometimes parents would have been wiped up leaving children. Very small children who are left. So the effects of the pandemic, we are going to feel it very, very well after years to come, where you find in communities you can't find parents because children are left, child-headed household. While we're dealing with, obviously, a society that has inequalities, that has poverty, high unemployment, if you have a high number of young people who obviously can't go and work, they have to depend on our social relief, you know, system, then it means it's a burden to the state because you're losing people who are active in terms of economically active, or who has potential if they're not now, but who have potential to be economically active. And that's what frustrates me, to say, shouldn't we have, you know, I mean, you still, there's a time where when you listen to people in election, you talk to them, and people will be cautious about, no, Makshoni, you know, we don't go. Now it's like, I don't know whether we've gotten used to living with COVID. Yes, we've said we must learn to live with it as government, but it wasn't that we must lower our guards. So people are now back to the issues of going, Gyotuduzwa, as I was saying. Yeah, and during the week, Gyapitizelwa, in the houses. We're not back to those things that drive-throughs, you know, where you can drop the flowers and go without going into the families. People are now back to going into the families, which is worrying. Two, the clustering of the malls as well. And this is one thing that we have picked up and we've asked for it to be responded to, that we need to go back to where there's containment of how many people can go into a mall now, because we're seeing the numbers. Restaurants, I had a meeting with the tourism sector this week. And I told them, guys, you can't be the ones. Now you have your minister.
Because now you as a tourism minister telling you, you are making my job difficult.
So I had a meeting with them this week and I appealed to them. So they had already committed to going out, spreading the news, spreading the message in order to make sure that the tourism sector is really compliant. Because I said, you know where we come from in terms of the hard lockdowns and everything.
And the impact.
If you guys are going to get us back, there are a lot of stories in terms of just people doing wrong things. Mm. And I think the issue as well, where I am as well frustrated, is no longer what you normally see. The visible policy, you no longer see. We were having a conversation with Minister Gale, and I committed to him that I'm going to fast track the issue of vaccination for the police. I do sympathize with them, where they feel that we should have also put them, like the nurses, up front. And obviously it was based on the availability of vaccine. But we are responding to that so that they can help us, because we really need the police.
Because you know what I feel like, Minister? The thing is, I'm seeing that, okay, there's restrictions in place. God, you'll find Uguti, Amanda was visiting a friend, and it's 9:30, but she's supposed to be at home. But there's nobody at the robot or anybody saying, Amanda, what are you doing? It's past the curfew. There's no longer that fear. And I'm going to, never mind whether you are drinking or not, you are not supposed to be on the road. Or you are, even if it's to pour petrol, that kind of thing where it's monitored. Or if you are not wearing a mask, things like that.
Yeah, I think that's where my argument around those who are saying increase the restrictions. And I'm saying if we have put the restrictions of level 3, and those are not yet enforced, because it's so fun. You're going to put restrictions of level 5.
That's a complaint.
It's still going to be the same. Mm-hmm. Because we need enforcement. As I'm saying, I do sympathize with the police, because they feel that they have to go out there. And many of them, actually, we are losing them. Many of them are getting sick. So that's another experience. So that's why we're trying to push. We're hoping by Tuesday, Wednesday, we should make an announcement about the police. What is good about them, they will be like the soldiers, no, the teachers. So currently the work that is being done, they are uploaded. So there isn't a process of registration for them.
Yes, what you have explained is that the teachers, you give the system everything that it needs. Because they are not encouraged to individually
register.
Okay.
So they just walk, they just go into the vaccine sites. They're told the vaccine sites they must do, and then they vaccinate. So we're doing the same with the police. I got a report that we are 80% ready. I'm pushing to have that starting with the 1st of July. If we can get that, then the 1st of July we'll have the police starting to
fight. Is that the same as the army? Because that's the immediate next cohort after the teachers.
We're hoping. The report I got was the police, because I'm really pushing for the police. You'd understand, because of the frustration I have with the current management of the pandemic and Gauteng and all that. The work, what we have done, we've segmented, so we like now have project managers. This one is responsible for leading the team that is working with the police, getting the data, getting, because we need to link them to the sites of vaccine. So you get their data to say this are the police, you verify them, they are on the system, then you link them, okay, the resilience or workplace, you link them to vaccine sites. So that's the work that is being done with the police, with its three cores, is the police, correctional service, and soldiers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what we are doing.
Okay, so after the police, it will be?
If we can, based on the availability of the vaccine and their numbers, we'll look at that. If we have enough vaccine and we have the enough matching the numbers, we'll do them at the same time. But if not, then we'll start. The priority will be first the police.
Okay, can we move on to the restrictions? Because people are not responding, so we need to act. The Premier yesterday mentioned that he's not happy again with level 3. And Gota, he doesn't want level 5, so obviously the next one that would be suggested is level 4. Has he suggested that to you? Would you be taking that to the ACCC?
No, he hasn't. He hasn't brought that. I heard it on the media.
Oh, also on the news.
I was with his team. They didn't suggest that to me.
So what do we do now? Because Gauteng is in trouble.
No, it remains his view. He needs to submit properly.
Because channel needs to be followed.
Yeah, because... I mean, the advisor, I'm meeting the MEC, the Ministerial Advisory Committee.
Tomorrow.
Yes, I'm not in support of level 5, that I can say. We've committed as government that there must be lives and livelihoods saving. My issue is we must be clear on what we want to resolve. We want to bring down the numbers. If you want to bring the numbers, for example, what is it that you need to do? Enforcement of the, we've got a curfew. Is it being enforced? Not yet. So people are still moving around. So we're not even yet at just making sure that's level. Are we guaranteed that we, if we say move to level 4, will you have? So that's where my issue is. So I get wary to announce things for the sake of announcement. So we shouldn't make the president stand and say we are now in level 4 and people continue as normal. You know?
So it's not that you are not listening to people?
No.
Okay.
No, it's not that I'm not listening. I'm listening, I can hear, but I'm worried about just doing things for the sake of doing them. Okay. So we need to be able to work together in terms of enforcement, us, and all that. Similarly, even from us, we've said to Gauteng, can we see your community screening? And I'm still saying that because I'm not seeing it. So before we can rush to other levels, can we see the basics being done? That's my issue.
Okay. And then they were very, in your interview on with JJ, there was a follow-up interview which was very scathing from the two professors where they were saying things like, we advised that let's open NESREG. We've advised that the rollout, I think the wording that was even used was like the deployment of the soldiers was a joke or something like that. That there were plans that they had recommended that were not being rolled out. They were very critical of how the province responded and a little bit about how national and how they feel ignored. What was your response when you heard that? And did you ignore them?
No, I'm meeting them tomorrow. Just to understand what are they complaining about, because I was shocked. You see, we are responsible and accountable as members of the executive. So it's different from somebody who can stand there and just throw, and then tomorrow can change their minds. There is no accountability. You don't have any parliament to stand on and an auditor general to respond to. Now, when you look at NASREC, value for money. So were they expecting that throughout the time, government was supposed to pay money on empty base? I mean, it's not logical. It's just basic logic. And when it was not used first wave to its full capacity, when it was not used second wave to its full capacity.
Just to explain to the people, how much was that costing you? Because maybe we need to tell them that it costs.
I think Gauteng will give the figures.
Okay.
Yeah, Gauteng will be able to give the figures. I'm just saying from a principal point of view, I don't want to get into the issues of the cost and everything.
Because people are saying it's a no-brainer. That's the thing. Is maybe we don't understand that it costs the government maybe each day, maybe, I don't know.
I think they should be able to give you the figures to say this is how much it costs. So, but equally, what they're not acknowledging is that there were bed capacity. I mean, Gauteng, after over time, since last year, they've increased beds with almost 1,400 into the province. That's the first thing. So beds that never existed, 1,400 at the time they built NASREC, then they started increasing capacity into that. That was something else. And the second issue, with the issue around the soldiers, we expected more soldiers. But because of the glitter of the system, the soldiers pulled back. We couldn't get them. Yes.
Oh.
We were going to be more. So we got.
How much did you ask for?
No, we were expecting almost about, first it was going to be the first round of 100 of them to come in. And because of the delay and they were on standby forever, then it took long for us to get. But secondly, remember the soldiers were not vaccinated. So that's part of the issue now. We needed to get them into the vaccine so that they can come.
But wouldn't the argument be that it's their national duty?
It is their national duty, but they don't just wake up and go anywhere. They are commanded.
That's by the chain president. Of command.
No, even their own commanders, okay. In terms of the generals. So you need to be able to report somewhere. So you don't just wake up and go. So there was that logistical issue. And somebody who says it's a joke. It's not a joke. They have helped Habara. Habara is running in terms of those extra beds. They've added capacity. Now, for them to be said that they are ignoring, for example, I can say to you, the last advisory I received, it's almost everything that they recommended was taken. Literally. The only thing that was not taken, I can say 100%, the only thing that left, they had made a recommendation to say, with Charlotte McClurk there not being there, take private sector. Private sector is under strain. So there is no private sector to assist you. And I was asking myself, which is what I'm going to talk to them about, whoever's informing that view. Because they need to be able to do a basic analysis first. Get information so that you can be able to. So that's the issue. And I wouldn't talk about other things previously about my predecessor. I don't think it's correct. But I can account for me. I've met with them. I've asked them. I made sure before I can go to public and say even a single word, I've met them.
So you've not ignored them?
I've not ignored. I don't know when. What I have less than 30 days in this post. When did I ignore them? They have my cell numbers and I've said my phone is available. I answer my phone. I mean, I talk to many of them, female colleagues that wants to talk. Anyone who wants to talk to me, they will tell you. But they can drop a WhatsApp, I respond. So I don't know who ignored them. They need to come out clean to say who ignored them. Because surely it's not myself.
In terms of Gauteng, what is the most urgent and pressing issues? Is it the bed capacity, oxygen? What is pressing?
We have urgent. Oxygen. We don't have problems of supply. That's why I was shocked with what they are saying, that they are having. You know, let me tell you what is the sometimes we misunderstand, and that's why I'm saying I'm going to have a conversation with them tomorrow as well. The issue one is that we have huge pressure in the private sector.
Because even the bed story came because of the pressure.
It's the pressure in the private sector. There's still capacity in public. So you have those preferences. One, if I arrive at MediClinic, I want to be admitted. They say there's no bed, but there's a bed in Barra. Do I go? We tend not to want to, ordinarily. We being honest.
Because it's government.
Yeah, because there's myth perception about public health facilities. And that, but I'm paying my medical aid. Why must I go to Barra? Remember, you coming to this MediForum, MediClinic, Lancet, whatever, and what is it, the intuition? Because you're saying, I'm paying every month my medical aid. Now, I expect a service as a client. When I arrive, they tell me, no, I want a bed. They're going to send me to a public hospital. I will ask first, why am I going to public hospital when I'm paying a medical aid? It's an ordinary response. It's a simple response of people demanding from the private sector to take care of them. Now, on the same time, you have a bed. So there's been hospitals that had a facility, you know, like Steve Biko, of almost like a private. Charlotte had that and all that. Not all hospitals are there. So not all hospitals will have that facility of a private type of a room and all those things and the treatment. So when people see that they're going, they sometimes prefer to go back home and say, I'll go and wait for the other thing. Similarly, when you go to Bronx Hospital, majority of the private clients have been referred to public and they're admitted. So the report I got in terms of the hospital bed, public sector still has space. The challenge we have is private sector. But even on that, that's why one of the things that has been done is to be able to do this thing that the medical facilities will do the home services of the oxygen and everything. To say, no, you can still, if it's an issue of oxygen, to take care of yourself and all that. Because people are just preferring to be in private hospitals, some of them. So the pressure has been that side. We've actually gone through, that's why I had to go back and said, guys, the noise about the beds, I just can't take it. Can you show me where are the beds? Literally, that's what I did. We went as far as sending people physically to hospitals in Gauteng. I phoned the DDG who's responsible. I said, Mamel, I'm tired of this noise. I see on Twitter, there's a doctor that says there's no bed. I listen to radio, I open TV, everybody's talking about beds in Gauteng.
And how they transfer out. Yes. They just transfer and transfer.
I said, what is happening? He says, Minister, we don't seem to get the right data. And we actually started doubting our own colleagues. I must be honest. We doubted our own colleagues to say they're not telling us the
truth. They're lying.
They're lying. And then we had to get a team from National, lucky because we are here. They went splitting into hospitals physically to talk to people there. Now, where the pressure is not inside as well as the emergencies. that is there. The pressure on the emergency, because remember, before they can admit you, there must be some admission, pre-assessments and everything. If you're coughing, do you have COVID or you just coming? But another thing with the private sector, by first week I arrived, we got that they had in a lot of people hospitalized, but who were not COVID-related.
Because life is happening alongside COVID.
Yes. So that's what we are trying to understand. And you would understand previously what has been happening with other waves. We would literally prioritize COVID over any other illness.
Hence the cancer patients were complaining.
Yes, hence the cancer patients were complaining. Would put off the non-priority, what we would call non-urgent surgical things.
Operations.
Operations to put. So those things though, because people who need them, they have long-term consequences. And some of the things, it could be that we are starting to feel that. But another phenomenon about Gauteng, I was just looking at the statistics that NICD has released and which we've asked them to do more analysis. And I'm hoping once I get it, we can be able to start going into public about it and ask the scientists to go, if there's anything out of it. But there's a more of the younger generation who are being infected during this round. And that's why some people are asking, do we have Delta plus variant? Mm. And I'm saying, we still have Beta as the variant in the country. There's no evidence that says there's a Delta plus. But what concerns is this age group? Now we're thinking, okay, it could be the parties. It could be, you know, the non-compliance and recklessness of a younger generation, and we have to look at it. Perhaps the older generation has become more cautious, the older generation, because they know that, you know, I have to work and everything, because they're the comorbidities and all that. But also remember, it's a flu season. So compared to second wave, it's winter, so the flu would come. But ordinarily, those are some of the things. But we're still doing an analysis of how to really understand. But from where I'm sitting, I still believe it's just non-adherence.
Mm. Okay. Yeah. And then I just want to quickly talk about Charlotte McGregor and Ashanti Gold Hospitals in Carltonville. Mm-hmm. Charlotte McGregor opened, but it's only the oncology.
Yes.
When will you be opening the rest so that it can help you with the COVID?
The Premier committed yesterday, so I've not been able to receive the figures and all that. By last night, the team was saying they are still working on finalizing. Remember, we had even redirected some of the medical practitioners out of Sandot. So the process of reestablishing and bringing everybody back, it will take a couple of days. So
it's a matter of great urgency for you.
Yeah, it's a matter of urgency in terms of making sure that as we reach. But I was, I'm looking forward to seeing if the numbers would continue to drop. All we need is a couple of days of dropping. But obviously, we are almost at weekend. Weekend becomes a bit of a low. So we'll see today how the numbers are tonight, and then we'll see next week. There's been quite a lot of work behind the scenes to really get everything working. That's why I say I can assure you there's no oxygen shortage. Yeah.
Even in last week, the one professional spoke about how Afrox has, like, I heard the presentation last week.
No, there's no oxygen shortage. Even the bed capacity, we've increased. In terms of the beds, we are activating them in terms of the nurses. We've done the work with a solidarity fund to assist us in terms of the nurses for them to be deployed. We've brought in the NGOs. So there's quite a lot of work that has been done. But what I need to indicate is that between the time you put restrictions, them being enforced, and the time you see the outcome, it's almost like a 2 week lag. So you need to always watch that.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's a lapse. Okay.
Yeah. It takes some time for those to get effect.
Or to see the results.
The results of it. Yeah.
I see. And then just as we close up, Minister, in the beginning of the pandemic, every channel, every radio station, every newspaper, everywhere you went, there was advertising about COVID, there was awareness. But I'm not sure whether on top of it's me, maybe I'm on DSTV or I'm not seeing that as much as it used to. What happened there? Why are we seeing less of just general, you know, the information that you give us about register on star, what, that information should be also on TV and radio, just continuous awareness.
Look, the issue is, Why?
It does that have anything to do with digital vibes?
No. Okay.
Off the record. Okay, off the record.
Let me say, one, is that it's costly. It will take a lot of money to do it. I've not really, I don't want to be to speak out of turn. I've not had time to really focus on the digital vibe matter to see what they've done, whether it has been value add or not. And I precisely took that decision consciously not to do it because there's an investigation. So it saves me the time to go and do that. So let the investigators look at it, whether it was value for money, if it was not, whether what it was doing, then I can deal with the after effects. But because as well, I came just on the third wave and the vaccine. So everybody was like, can we get this vaccine done properly and clear messaging, then the third wave. So my attention really moved into these two things, to get them on track, to get the vaccine run out, to get the systems in place to deal with the third wave. So that's what has been. So that sort of took a bit of a, you know, backstage. I think more as well from GCIS, a lot of work has been going into the vaccine communication and the COVID communication. I think that's where it is. We've had to push quite a lot. I mean, if you look at the reports, that's what we were doing. I had to start now with the team to say, can we bring back the communication of the vaccine, so of management of the pandemic. And that's why even now you can see we're almost standardizing our weekly briefing to Fridays in the morning. I know some people are saying it's too early, but it helps because then you can know. Everybody knows Friday, 7:30 is a health briefing. Tell us about what's happening with the pandemic and what is happening with vaccine. And you balance the message, and we can bring different people in terms of those to be able to talk to the nation.
And then just let's go to the vaccines. Minister, please can you tell us about the how the allocation is done in terms of provinces? Like, why don't provinces that are moving with speed not getting more vaccines?
No, they are.
Oh, are they?
Yeah.
Okay.
What we do, remember we distribute vaccine. That's why there was this presentation of the live system and everything. So the system able to tell us at the end of the day, this area, this is how much stock they have, and this is how much they've used. And then it gets replenished. So we don't want to allocate a lot of vaccine in a province and it goes and sits because it's a risk. So it must be based on how it's utilized. They have targets per province, they have targets per area, they've got targets per vaccine size. So we look at that based on their targets and all that. And then obviously because all the sites, other sites were still learning, there's been quite a lot of learning in the process and we're almost there. I mean,
which province are you worried about?
I'm worried about Northern Cape. I mean, the lowest district is where I'm deployed as a district champion. I've just been redeployed. Pixley, it's sitting at 2% in terms of vaccination. Obviously, because the population there is vast and all that, and you can understand that they preferred to do a J&J because it will be easier. I mean, from one ward to the other, it's about 50 Ks. Yes. So to be able to do the vaccine in those communities, it would take a lot of time. I'm worried about Gauteng because of the population size. So their performance versus the population size, I'm not worried. I'm not happy. So I did tell them. Because they see themselves in terms of numbers of vaccination higher as leading everybody. But in terms of population, they're sitting at 70%. And I said, it can't be. So they need to move the numbers. And if you look at the many of the sites, you don't find. So we need proactive measures to be able to. So as I said, KZN leads in terms of spread, so they are making sure that there's equitable distribution of the vaccine across the province. Limpopo leads in terms of numbers per population, so they're sitting at almost, with a 60 plus population, they're sitting at 68% of that population. So you can see there's energy, there's drive, there's focus, so there's a difference in terms of how provinces are performing. We continue to monitor and we're hoping this coordinated work-ins will assist us. So Mpumalanga has started as well. After we had our meeting, they have now started to say this.
What makes, is it Limpopo? What makes it look like it's performing really well in the Western Cape?
No, Limpopo is performing very well because of it's a rural province. Why? And for them to be sitting at 68% of 60 plus population, it's a good performance. You think about their logistics, you think about the vastness of the province, and what has made is two things from where I'm sitting. The fact that the MEC involved community leaders and influential people in the communities to be part of the vaccine rollout, that's the first thing. Secondly, the coordinated walk-ins or coordinated approach, because what they have done, utilizing these influential people, your councillors, your what they do, then they go and say, okay, they register, they count how many people are in this community. There are so many. When they deliver the vaccine, they register them and vaccinate them at the same time. So there isn't an issue of transporting them twice. So they've been coordinating village by village.
I want to talk about that because one of the things we were talking about, Uguti, we mustn't just say hesitancy is blamed at maybe one particular aspect. You'll find that maybe someone was making an example, Uguti, generally black people or people in rural areas have no problem with the vaccination. Mm. We've been vaccinating our children. Even in rural areas, mothers have made a plan to vaccinate. So there's a lot of dynamics that are happening. Mhlawumbe, you're the only person that works at home and you can only take umdumdala during the weekend because it's 50 cases. So it's very like, there's a lot of, it's complex. This issue is very, very complex.
And remember, it's not that you can vaccinate. You know, the other vaccination can go to the nearest clinic. Whereas with our vaccine sites, they're not in every clinic. That's the reality. I mean, compare the country, how many wards we have. And then we currently, we're sitting at 500. We just increased with 200. So we're still below 1,000 in terms of vaccine sites. And we're trying to push to have above. That's one of the targets, is to get more vaccine sites. I've said to the team, we're going to focus on
because they said there's more vaccines now. Yeah. So now the plan is to...
We need to move in.
The number of elderly people vaccinating is very worrying. Today, it was said that of the 50 that are registered, only 25%. What are you doing to address that? It's very, you've said it over and over and over.
Yeah, no, the issue of coordinated, but also remember, in the families, we are influential to our parents. And that's why we believe in that as we move to the next levels, you would see more and more of the elderly being vaccinated. If I go, as I'm saying, I registered my mother, but she went on her own to register. So I encouraged her because in the process of me registering her, then she became interested in the vaccine. She had not registered. So she was here. I sat with her. I said, okay, let me, have you registered? She said, no. I said, let's do it.
Then but also with more categories being open, you as the 50-year-old can go with your mother.
You can go with your mother and vaccinate
at the same time, if she's registered.
She's registered. Yeah, you can register as you register yourself. Yeah, it's only those of us, we are still at 40 plus.
people are critical of the two particular vaccines that we are rolling out at the moment, which is just J&J and vaccine and Pfizer. And they're asking questions over and over again. Okay, Sinovac, there's hope. What about, they keep asking about Sputnik. I think I've heard you answer that, look, this before.
Sputnik, there's no data. There's nothing we can do. The reality, and that's what I keep on saying, we cannot risk putting a vaccine that there's no data about its efficacy, its side effects. If you put a vaccine and then it suddenly kills people, who takes responsibility? It's government. It's the regulator. Now, why do we want, similarly, I mean, even the ones that we have passed, there's constant work on them to understand. And that's why even when AstraZeneca was approved in the country, when it was found that it's not going to do what we wanted, it was stopped.
And then it was you who was blamed again for approving AstraZeneca.
No, it was approved. Remember, AstraZeneca was approved for just an ordinary COVID-19.
Mm.
When we had Delta variant, no, Beta variant. When we had the Beta variant, yeah, the one. Then the efficacy dropped. I mean, I'm one of the people who said, no, we can't. We've put a limit. We've gone out publicly to say we will utilize a vaccine if its efficacy is at this level. We've communicated that. Let's stick to it. And they stuck to it.
And then they say,
now, even the three had to go through the process.
Mm.
For example, I mean, if Sputnik applicants wanted Sputnik to be approved, it will be where others are. Let's take, Moderna was the first one to be talked about. But there's not been even an application from Moderna. Why? That's the question we must ask. Are they saying to us as South African government, we must go and apply on behalf of pharmaceuticals? We can't.
It's that process that Dr. Rees explained.
Yes.
That we are responding to yes. applications. It's yes. not the government or SAPA that goes mm-hmm. out and says, oh, we see, it's now we're talking about Cuba. Okay, now let's run and go ask Cuba for their vaccines. It doesn't work that way.
It doesn't work that way. And you know, one of the things that people forget is that even the data that is told to be efficient, it's not done by us, by the way. Do you know that? The trials are not done by us. All we require is that if you have a vaccine, you run the trials, you do everything, you give us the data. You give us information to say, we've run the trials. These are the results. And then they are tested. You submit them to WHO. We get them from... We don't even want you to start new. If you submit to WHO, we'll have access to the data. That's it.
Mm.
And that's what we're asking.
And then what about Sinovac? Okay, Sinovac, we've started work on it, right?
Sinovac work has been done. I understand Sinopharm has just submitted. Last week there was a notice that Sinopharm has made an application. Sinopharm and Sinovac are Chinese vaccines. So the Sinovac is almost, what I got, it's almost towards the end. They've submitted everything. There's been a verification of the information that's been asked to finance. So the team... Actually, they've even had a workshop type, not even just in a letter. That's what I got to ensure that the information that is required is submitted. And the applicant actually is comfortable that the work is done. And very, very funny, the applicant is uncomfortable about being associated, the vaccine being associated to political parties.
Oh, okay. And then I heard JJ like tearing into you the other day saying, why are we not choosing vaccines from BRICS countries? Why have we gone to the West? Why are we not... our friends. Does the vaccination doesn't have anything to do with who's our friend, who's not our friend?
Does living have to do with who's your friend or not? I mean, even it's like food. Do you look at your bread and say, is it from my friend or my enemy? Or do you just fill your stomach? That's the issue. It's about lives. If my friend has a poison, I must go and take a poison and say, no, it's because it's from my friend, and then you die. It doesn't work like that. So the issue of vaccine, that's why I keep on saying people need to remember, these are lives that we're dealing with. It can't be on the basis of friendship. It must be on the basis of scientific evidence of this thing working and being efficient. Because it's the same public that's going to, if we went and Russia and said, no, our friends Cuba, our friends... Russia, our friends, China, bring the vaccine. Then suddenly, boom, people die. You'd say, you see this corrupt government. They've just gone and killed us with their friends.
You'll be blamed. And then in terms of our plans, right, the government has certain targets, and those targets have been moved and are being affected because of things that you are mentioning, is that we are, in some cases, we are not in control as the government, because like the issue that J&J was affected overseas, so it affects us. So that thing constantly moves us. When do you think we'll still be able to meet our target of May 2022, the herd immunity?
I think so.
You think we are on track?
From where we are, that's why we're doing now multiple parallel sites to do. We're pushing. That's why I'm saying the next line is for me to now push for confirmation of the numbers of the vaccine, the dates. I've been very clear to them. I've written to both Pfizer. I've written to both J&J since I've been here. They've put the dates. They must deliver on the dates that they've committed.
The ones that we spoke about this morning. All of those have been paid for.
Yeah. No, I don't know. I'll check that one.
Okay.
But they wouldn't deliver if we didn't pay.
That's true. Would you also be able to establish how much we've paid thus far in terms of just
the
whole
program? You have to talk to the teacher about those prices and everything. I don't discuss that.
Okay. On when can we see the vaccination being open to just the general public? Because some will argue, Guti, but I'm a journalist and I'm expected to cover the ANC's ace versus whoever outside where there's mass people. The teller can argue, but I must be at the shop. When are we expecting it to be open to just the general public thereafter? Or what follows after the 50 and the 40-year-olds and the factory workers and the manufacturing that was
Yeah, we will do it in multiple faced approach. So as I'm saying, it will be streams. So once we do the teachers, the police, then you'll bring them more, your economic side and what we call. So we're now in the process of identifying those. Who does it? The taxis, we've done pilots. There's a pilot with the taxis, it's a mid-rent. There's a pilot with the mining sector. So we're trying to understand different sectors, how they operate, to be able to say, okay, in the informal sector, for example, journalists. Not all journalists are registered under media houses. So there will be freelance journalists. So that's why the understanding the formal and informal side of sectors will help. For example, you come to tourism, not everybody is registered into an establishment. Others are independent tour guides and all those things that we've got to be able to understand. So there's that work now currently being done. We're hoping we'll be able to submit a plan by next week to the IMC. When it sits on Thursday, and then we can communicate. Hopefully, we'll have better news on Friday.
Why does the NCCC meet once a week?
No.
Why does it not meet as and when you feel like?
It meets fortnightly. So it can meet every week. It can meet when it's needed, but there hasn't been a need for us to meet.
Okay. I think
like last week, mm-hmm. There was a scheduled NCCC, and I did indicate from my side to say, we need, remember, part of the challenge we have sometimes is that too many meetings disrupt implementation.
And the president the other day said he complained about...
Yeah, so you end up taking decisions on top of decisions on top of decisions. I have a problem with that. So I've raised my concerns to say the team in health spending time in meetings.
Too much time.
Yeah, there's too much. Remember, they have to have meetings of COVID in terms of COVID-19 and NCCC, and then there's work streams. They attend all those. Remember, when you see NCCC, there's a whole lot of machinery and meetings happens. So it's work streams. You'll have economic, you'll have security, you'll have this. They sit, and in all those, Department of Health officials must be present. Then you move from that, there's a net joint, which way it combines. There must be representative of Department of Health. Then there's NCCC, they can participate. Then we move, there's vaccine ones. There's work streams in government. Then there's a technical team that supports the IMC. The Department of Health officials sit in all those. Then you leave that, there's the one that has government and business. They also have a meeting and the work stream. So literally last week I went to IMC to say these meetings are too many. I want them cut down.
And then there's parliament on top of that.
We're talking about these meetings that I'm mentioning. It just have to do with COVID. Has nothing to do with any other work that we have. In terms of primary health care, in terms of infrastructure of hospital, ensuring there's medicine, it has nothing to do with that.
So it's much more complex than we think it is.
This one is just COVID. Now, part of my frustration and my concern was that I can't have officials spending time in meetings. Then we come to meetings for the sake of coming, we'll present the same thing. I told them, if you
call meetings... And there's nothing to update?
No.
Okay.
If you call meetings every week, we'll come back the same way because there's no time sitting in meetings. So I've made my request in terms of changing the number of meetings so that the teams can focus
on the work.
On the work.
And then how are you juggling the management between the two hats? Because some would say there's a conflict of interest in that Turum is going to be like, no, but Minister, you know. But I mean, how do you juggle? Because health is about saving lives. Tourism is about saving business or the economy.
It's a typical example of how we need to balance lives and livelihoods. I am that example. The issue is, for me, right now what helps is that it's not peak time for tourism. We anticipated slow time during this time. I mean, in my conversation with the sector, December, April, when we were opening, we always prepared for closure in terms of June and July.
But also tourism has had to rethink.
Yes. No, we've planned for it. The issue for tourism is that we need planning. And I think it works even better now because I can say, okay, estimation. If we manage now, I'm able to push to say we need to manage this pandemic now because I know the need for opening later. So by end of August, at least, we need to be clear. The third wave needs to be gone.
Oh, the pressure to deal with the third wave so you can save your tourism.
I can save my tourism. So there's that, that's what I'm saying. There's a balancing between the two. So that's what is it. And one of the things is that with the tourism sector and the tourism portfolio, we've built relations. As I said, I met with them this week. So I have my regular meeting with the sector to touch base. But they know if there's an urgent matter, they send. There's quite a number of things. We finalize our norms and standards that are going to cabinet. The policy review is almost done. The team is finalizing now. I think they were panicking because I turned it back. I read and I was not happy, so I sent it back to the panel. They're supposed to submit to me because their target is August, but we're still within. I want to take it early. I think we can be able to take it earlier too.
But they complain that they you're being a bit more tough on them because of the other portfolio, or that you're paying more attention to how?
No. I think in terms of the work, you outline what you needed to do. As I'm saying, this would have been my downtime in terms of tourism.